with Jerry Dunleavy and James Hassan, the author of a new book, Kabul, The Untold Story of Biden's Fiasco. James, I come to you because you've spoken of Bagram, and my understanding is that it was perfectly designed to do what you said, to hold the country together. It's either 40 kilometers or 40 miles outside of Baghdad, outside of Kabul, which would have been perfect for the operation of evacuation. It also had all of the facilities to hold itself with troops, and airbase also was a listening post on China. It was magnificently well-placed. All of that is true. In doubts raised about leaving Bagram behind, the president and his counselors, Mr. Blinken, Mr. Sullivan, the National Security, were always mentioning 300,000 troops. You and Jerry make 300,000 a little song that they sing for several chapters. What were they talking about, James?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm really glad that you asked it, because I think this is an underrated aspect of the Biden administration's decision to withdraw, how they withdrew, and also how they sold it to the American people. As you mentioned, they repeatedly throughout the spring of 2021 and even throughout the summer, after President Biden announced that we were going to withdraw all troops, they repeatedly claimed that the Afghan military was 300,000 strong. And President Biden at one point said, and I believe this was in his April 2021 speech announcing the withdrawal from Afghanistan, claimed that they were therefore almost as strong as any, you know, first world country military. And they used this talking point to sell the idea that they could leave and the Afghan military could simply, carry on. And that 300,000 figure is just simply false for several reasons. First, the number that their calculation included local police, border police, and all kinds of other, you know, semi-paramilitary units, which is absurd because if you think about it, I mean, we wouldn't say that the U.S. military is 10 million strong because we're counting police forces in Peoria, Illinois, or somewhere else. It just makes no sense. So it was disingenuous on that level. But secondly, there was even among the Afghan military, roles themselves, there was a wide known problem of what are called ghost units. They were units that existed entirely on paper, so that a corrupt general or Ministry of Defense figure could collect the salaries for those, non-existent soldiers. And this is well known in the Pentagon at the time. It's been documented. It was documented for years prior. And in Kabul, in our book Kabul, we bring the receipts for that. The Pentagon knew that this was the case. So the number was inflated even as to the Afghan military. But when you get to the summer of 2021, I believe even as late as June, General Milley was still hyping this 300,000 figure. In fact, he inflated it at that point to 325,000. Not only were those, first two, not only was it inaccurate for the first two reasons I described, but by that time, the Afghan military had been taking significant casualties, a lot of desertions. So even their actual ranks were already depleted. And so I think this is pernicious for two reasons. First, it sold this to the American people as something other than what it was. Because if the administration had simply said, hey, we're going to withdraw and the Afghan military is probably going to fall apart sooner rather than later, then, well, at least there's a public debate about that. And make no mistake, there was very little doubt that the Afghan military would collapse. We spoke with senior members of CIA, who said that the agency's internal assessment was that the Afghan military would collapse in as little as 30 days without U.S. contractor and military support. And the outlying figure, that the greatest number, was 90 days. So they knew that. But I think one of the other reasons why this was so damaging was it gave a lot of American citizens who were in the country working as aid workers or, you know, for the World Bank or for almost anything else, a false sense of security, because we told them, hey, you don't need to get out now. Things aren't going to collapse. You're fine. And then in a matter of weeks, the Taliban overran, you know, the entire country and were outside the gates of Kabul. And American citizens and our Afghan allies were stuck behind Taliban lines with very little way to, you know, get to safety without endangering their own lives.
And John, all that I would add to that is, on top of the Biden administration pushing this obviously fictional 300,000 strong Afghan military figure, at the same time, as we were pulling all of our troops out in rapid fashion, that also meant pulling our contractors, our logistics, our ISR, our advisors, all of the things that we had built the Afghan military around. And at the same time, even into June, July, and August,
30 seconds, Jared,
the U.S. military still hadn't come up with a plan about how to continue to keep the Afghan military fighting and functioning. So it obviously ended in disaster, and you can see that play out. But the rhetoric that we were using was very misleading. And as we were setting up the Afghan military for failure, we were misleading about its size and its strength.
Jared Dunleavy, James Hassan, Cavill, I'm John Beck.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.